Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
Who's this?
Who are you looking for?
What number is this?
What number did you dial?
13.
You got the wrong number.
No, I don't.
Okay, bye. Hello?
I'm sorry, I had the right number.
Okay, no, you didn't, but I have your number, so...
What's your at?
I'm hanging up now.
Wait, don't hang up.
What?
I just want to at you.
There's Tinder for this. Goodbye. Hello?
Why don't you follow me?
Who is this?
You follow me, I'll follow you.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You're making popcorn?
Uh-huh.
Do you use hot butter topping?
What?
I like lots of hot, greasy butter. You ever licked hot butter off your fingers?
Okay, I'm about to be on a podcast. I gotta go.
Wait, really? What podcast?
A scary one.
Oh, you like scary podcasts?
Yeah.
What's your favorite scary podcast?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. Tell me your favorite.
What's your favorite scary podcast?
Guess.
The No Sleep Podcast?
No, guess again.
I bet you like lore.
No, you're doing this wrong. You get one more guess. I'll give you a hint. This is episode 13.
Wait. Is this...
Speak all evil.
That's just this kid with long hair trying to make a movie. With a bunch of cute actresses, that's all.
But look what came out of it, though.
You know, it's great. I was lucky. It was fun.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent. I am deep down in the Tomb of Doom. I am here joined via satellite by Dave, Kevin, and Kat. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hi.
Great, how's it going?
Hi.
Looks great. You're in various cars and outhouses. I'm trying to phone this thing in so we can get it done. This week, we are talking slasher. Slasher is a classic horror genre. Also, certainly bleeds into a lot of thriller, mystery, whodunit. I would say that the firmest roots of the slasher film is in early Italian giallo movies. Directors like Dario Argento, Mario Bava in the 70s. They did these movies kind of based on Italian mystery fiction paperbacks, often with yellow covers, hence the name. And you'd find a lot of black-gloved killers. You didn't know who they were, but you would see their hands and see the knives, and they would certainly have a body count. These were essentially slasher movies. You have your unknown killer. Today... I think that the most solid definition of what is a slasher movie, you have a masked or unknown killer, you have groups of people, you need a body count of some kind. Typically blades, I think you can have some gunplay going on, but you need the blades in there. And most importantly, I think you need a moving killer. The killer has to be chasing people around. He's going to different places. You can't just get away from him by leaving a fixed location. If he's just in a fixed location, I think you're getting into more home invasion, haunted houses, and things like that. Of course, these rules are squishy, and it's an ongoing debate. There's actually a cool site, Kevin, you might know about, thefinalgirl.com.
Yeah, I do.
They have a whole thing about what constitutes a slasher movie, and actually cite Carol Clover, who we met in episode 10 mockumentary, who wrote Men, Women, and Chainsaws. And there's a lot of sort of, you can debate these things down into the weeds, but I think we're looking at masked unknown killers, targeting groups, moving around, going anywhere. And everybody chose a slasher movie this week. All of these movies are meta to whatever degree, some to greater and some to lesser degrees. But I thought it was interesting everyone picked a meta slasher. Kat, once again, you went the oldest school of any of us with Scream 1996. Wes Craven, I imagine this is one of your favorites.
It really is. So I didn't think I'd be picking the oldest slasher movie, but it's definitely one of the classics for me. Definitely one of my favorites. When I hear slasher, I just picture that ghost face. Yeah. I picture that knife just slashing boobs left and right.
I think this is
a very twisty slasher film. Twists and turns around every corner. One of the big things that I think threw a lot of people off, including myself when this first came out, is, you know, cover star, 90s it girl, Drew Barrymore, gets offed, you know, within the first 10 minutes. And I don't think anyone was expecting that when it first came out. Like, she was on the box. She was basically carrying this movie. And just to have her, you know, be axed like that quickly was, I think, a very, you know, it cemented this movie in the unexpected slasher situation.
Did Drew Barrymore's character influence your vibe at all? Because I happened to notice when this came on, I was like, that looks a lot like Kat.
So literally, I watched this movie today, and as soon as she came on the screen, I was like, oh, that's my haircut.
I had the exact same thought during that whole sequence, which is, I think, maybe my favorite sequence of the movie. Drew actually gets the best scene. She was supposed to be mm-hmm. the lead in this, I believe, and then had to back out for some other scheduling conflicts and ended up doing that opening. And I had the same thought. I was like, boy, you know, she, not just the hair, but somehow she, her face kind of looks like you. And then it was like when the caller that keeps calling her starts doing these like horror movie quizzes and trying to catch her on technicalities. It was like if Kevin was prank calling Kat.
You know, if Drew Barrymore picked Halloween as her favorite movie.
Yeah, but then he tries to,
you know, we
he
got
tries
this whole
to catch
love affair
her
between Kat and Michael Myers.
I mean, maybe I've based my whole personality.
Yeah, and that's right, because she picks Halloween
on
and then
this character.
I loved when Nightmare on Elm Street is mentioned, and she says, the first one was good, but the rest sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
that was
great.
Kind of a funny thing by Wes Craven. But then the caller tricks her on the Friday the 13th trivia question.
Yeah.
And that's where I was like, oh, it's Kevin on the line calling her.
I
am Ghostface.
High potency top, smoke a bag of black and feel the vibe on
the thing about this movie that dialogue really bothered me. It almost extracted me from every scene that could have been potentially scary. I was just kind of distracted by the dialogue. I did like all the horror movie references, but they could have been a little bit more subtle about it.
It was very meta.
Look, this movie is one of the biggest of all time. I mean, you're talking about a movie that basically, for better or worse, revitalized the entire slasher genre. I mean, horror was dead. It did not have a pulse at the theater before Scream came along and kind of kicked it back into the mainstream. You look at a movie that was made for $15 million and it pulled in $173 million at the time, which today would be almost $300 million. I love this movie. I think I went to see it 6 times in the movie theater when it was out. That's how excited I was that horror was out. Well, it was, I mean, I was also in my teen years, so, I mean, it's a chance to bring 6 different girls to the movies. So, you know, win-win.
Oh, Romeo. And, yeah.
Dedicated to all the ladies out there who like to go to the movies, you know, especially you, girl. Let me take you to the movie, sure. I'm sure later on you will be my baby. Let's sit down and just be by my side. I got the popcorn, I know what else you like. Let me take you to the movie, sure. I'm sure later on you will be my baby.
I did some research on movies that came out in 1996, and there was not a lot of great horror movies. It was a lot of like really bad, like Hellraiser sequels and just sequels that you never even heard of. Like when I looked through it, I was like really surprised. You had like Dusk Till Dawn, you had The Craft, Frighteners, but there were really wasn't a lot at the time, anything good. This Scream was definitely on the top of the pile, as begrudging I am to say it. At the time, you know, it was an important movie.
And that's why I'm saying for better or for worse. I mean, it spawned a bajillion studios greenlighting tons of horror movies that they probably wouldn't have had Scream not been such a success. I mean, after Scream, you had this run of things like, you know, Urban Legend, Final Destination series kicked off, Halloween H2O, Bride of Chucky. It obviously birthed the Scary Movie horror comedy franchise. It put a train on the tracks that it took quite a few years. Probably the horrible third entry in the Scream series finally slowed the train down. But, you know, for better or worse, this really did kind of kick horror back up.
I don't think you have some of the movies that we talked about last week, like Tucker and Dale, for example, without Scream. This was probably my favorite movie this week. It invented the meta slasher. You could say that Wes Craven sort of started down this road with Wes Craven's New Nightmare a couple of years before. But this really invented the meta slasher, the self-aware, sort of self-parodying. Most slashers since Scream have been meta in some way or another. Like, there really aren't a lot of totally straight-played, non-aware slashers since then. And I had so much fun watching this because I forgot more about it than I remembered. I forgot Neve Campbell. I just was thinking it was like Courtney Cox. I forgot Rose McGowan Hollywood Prime. I forgot Henry Winkler, of all people. Henry Winkler is in this, and he's tremendous. So I really loved it. And I thought, again, out of all the movies we watched this week, which are all meta in one way or another, I thought this was far and away the best one. I can see why it is regarded by many as a genre classic today.
I think too, Dave, you mentioned, you know, from Dusk Till Dawn, you know, it's important to know that Wes Craven directed this, obviously famous from the Nightmare on Elm Street series. But this was almost not a Wes Craven movie. Robert Rodriguez, a good friend of Quentin Tarantino, was actually attached to this before Craven. Danny Boyle, George Romero, and Sam Raimi were all approached. And the writer of this movie, Kevin Williamson, who has gone on to do quite a bit of writing in our genre here, he didn't like their take at it. He actually thought that Craven got it the best. But we always play what if with a lot of these movies when we find out, you know, Drew Barrymore could have been Sidney Prescott. What would this movie have looked like if George Romero had done it? So I think it's always fun to kind of see who was attached to things. But ultimately, you know, this was, you know, sort of the rebirth of Wes Craven, you know, moving beyond Freddy finally. And I'm glad he got it because, I think he did a great job.
I think that slashers are probably the most dumbed down that the genre gets. And that's not really an insult. I would say it's even more dumbed down than like horror comedy. Because at least in horror comedy, there's like this wit and this transparency that you know kind of what you're getting into. But I have kind of a hard time with slashers. They're fun, but like I didn't totally, like when you mentioned Scary Movie, my thought was, well, that's a horror comedy of a horror comedy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, how far is this going to go? Like, I couldn't remember. I kept confusing parts of Scary Movie with parts of Scream. Like, I know what's happening next. I remember this part, and then it would be something completely different.
I think I saw a Scary Movie before I saw Scream, if I'm remembering it correctly.
Wow.
And so it was definitely that moment where I'm watching Scream, I'm like, oh, it's just like Scary Movie. I mean, I was, what, like 12? Probably shouldn't have been watching either of them. But Scream was actually originally called Scary Movie
mm-hmm.
before it got its name changed to Scream,
yeah,
which I think
buddy,
is funny.
By our buddy Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, Harvey. Oh, great.
He said, you can't call it Scary Movie. You gotta call it Scream. tell Rose to come up to my hotel room.
Oh. No, cancel.
You know, you could tell how old this movie is when at one point the girls are pining over getting a glimpse of Tom Cruise's penis.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't know what Scientology is yet.
Yeah, what movie were they watching where they were trying to get a glimpse of his penis?
All the Right Moves.
All the Right Moves.
Yeah. Oh,
just like, Mission Impossible 2.
I rented All the Right Moves tonight. You get to see Tom's penis.
The Richard Gere line's pretty great, too. Apparently that almost got them sued.
What did they say about him?
There was going on at the time that Richard Gere had a habit of doing something with gerbils.
Be careful.
With the rodents, yes.
No, he stuffed gerbils in his asshole.
Okay, that's not being careful.
That was the rumor at the time.
Right up the asshole.
No, that's a fact. That's a fact. Oh. Richard Gere put gerbils in his asshole.
I think one thing that we should talk about is the one of the things that this movie kicked off is the voice of Ghostface became an absolute, like, iconic voice.
Del Greedy, the greedy, conniving ass snake genie, cop with a bikini, who murdered Charles and Bernini. I'm feeling wheezy and I'm drained from the cheese.
So, loving this movie as much as I have, seeing it as many times as I did, I always assumed, maybe stupidly, that the voice of Ghostface was the actual actors themselves. So in this instance in Scream, I assume that it was the I don't think we're doing any fucking spoilers on Scream. If you haven't seen it, then sorry, fuck off. So you've got the two killers. So I always assumed that you know, Billy Loomis and Stu were doing, you know, their own voices through sort of some effects. But that's not the case. There's actually one guy that did the voice of Ghostface, and his name is Roger L. Jackson. And he's got a huge history of all these voices. One that blew me away was he's been the voice of a Powerpuff Girl in both the long-running show and the movie. Mm-hmm. But if knowing that when I watched it this time, he did such a phenomenal job doing the nuances of the two killers in Scream. If you really listen closely, like, there's times where he's talking and you can hear him almost do like the chuckle, like Matthew Lillard as Stu does. Like, he'll do like a and then like all of a sudden he'll get really serious again and you can tell that Billy's back on the phone.
Yeah, I think my favorite character from Scream is Matthew Lillard's character, solely for the end. When he's like, are you really going to call the police? And she's like, yeah. He's like, my parents are going to be so mad at me. And he's like crying and spitting out blood. I'm like, yes, your parents are going to be really upset.
That guy.
Thank you for saying Matthew Lillard instead of Matthew Lillard.
Lillard.
Like Kevin said. Makes him sound like some sort of like Juilliard like actor. Like, oh, Matthew Lillard.
Well, oh, Matthew Lillard from Scooby-Doo.
He had Look, that guy had a crazy job in the movie. I kept being like, I wouldn't say impressed, but like he was cast as the impossibly over animated wise guy, party guy. Like every single scene requires him to like jump on someone's back and like slap somebody and like make wise guy jokes. I mean, he's like some kind of really budget Jim Carrey as a teenager or something like that. He's wearing the silk bathrobe at the party. It's just like so over the top as that role. And he really embraced it.
he's admitting, like, the whole movie, pretty much all his lines are just admitting that he's the killer.
Yeah. So I think the cast of this movie is one of the, you know, most unbelievable, the people that they pulled in for it.
Great cast.
You guys were talking about Matthew Lillard. He actually wasn't auditioning for the role. He was bringing his girlfriend to a different audition and was just hanging out in the hall. And the casting director for Scream saw him in the hall and was like, hey, you have a minute to come audition for this? So I imagine that there was probably a breakup shortly after, you know, he got the part.
Well, he almost, Beaker from the Muppets was initially supposed to play his part.
Kevin, I have a question for Kevin. You know, there's an endless amount of references to past horror movies in this. And when I was watching it, I was thinking, man, Kevin must be like buying a new notebook just for this movie because there's so much of that going on. There is there's a reference to the town that dreaded sundown in one scene, yep. Right? A direct mm-hmm. reference. My favorite killing in the movie, and I think one of the most iconic killings in recent horror or slasher cinema, is the garage door, cat door killing of Rose McGowan.
Yes, I'm with you. I love that.
It was so good. But I wanted to ask Kevin, because I wasn't sure I caught it. Right before that happens, doesn't she say, "I spit on your garage"?
Yes.
Did you catch that?
Yes. Okay. I don't need a notebook. There's actually a website that literally lists every single reference down to the most subtle.
I mean, and you'd have to be an idiot to not notice all of them, though. I mean, they're so blatant.
Yeah. I mean, well,
but there's
actually,
a lot.
No. Yeah. There's
that's part of the dialogue that kind of got. That wore on me after a while. It's just like, right. All right, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, like when somebody's like, oh, it sounds like a Wes Carpenter movie.
Yeah.
You're like, okay. I mean, she doesn't know the difference between Craven and John Carpenter, but it's not the most believable one-off.
There was one thing in this movie that that kind of flipped my thinking as like, when I first started this movie, I remember seeing that costume and being like, that is about as scary as Joanne Fabric. That's the lamest costume. But you know, then it becomes that the genericness of the costume is what makes it scary, because all the kids in school are so immature that they're wearing the costume and scaring the girl in the bathroom that mm-hmm. just got, you know, attempted murdered. Mm-hmm. So I ended up liking the costume by the end, but when I first watched it, I was talking so much shit.
It's another thing, too, like speaking of the costume or just the killer in general, I don't know of a movie that has the killer get his ass kicked as much as Scream. Like, I love how much the killer takes a beating in this. And then if you watch 2 and 3, they just like, it almost gets comedic by the third one, like the shit that they, you know, throw at the killer. But yeah, I enjoyed that, you know, finally, you know, like a killer takes a door to the face, you know, and, you know, I think in a lot of these slasher films, traditional ones, you know, you don't ever see like Jason fall down or anything, you know, he just keeps plowing forward.
Yeah. He takes a lot of bumps. He ends up, I think, Dave, you mentioned he ends up in the ladies' room of the high school at some point, but right before he reveals himself, there's a I think is a classic sort of trope scene when Sydney, that's Neve's character, right? Sydney.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
When Sydney is in the bathroom and she overhears, the other girls don't know that she's in there. She's in the stall and she overhears them talking about her. Like that, mm-hmm. to me, I feel like that's been in at least 10 movies. The classic, you know, girls' room, overhear people trashing you. Kat, did you ever, I was curious if you ever had a personal experience, were you ever like in, or even in a restaurant or bar bathroom, were you ever in the bathroom, in the ladies' room, when there was some sort of coven going on, and maybe you were...
that I wasn't invited to?
And maybe you were the subject of that coven's conversation?
I wish that I was that important in high school that someone would have been having a weird conversation about me in a bathroom somewhere, but I guess I'm wondering if I would have been, because with that trope, the person either like swings that door open and, you know, comes out all proud and is like, well, actually, I do this and blah, 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 blah. Or like in Scream, they just sit there and cry with that ugly cry face.
That's what you would do.
Yeah, I would definitely be the ugly crier. And I'd be like, why are they picking on me? I don't even know.
So you just never heard it, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I didn't. If people want to text me.
You never caught them.
Yeah, just like people can like send me texts about what they feel about me, and I can cry in my apartment and not say anything.
Trent, do you remember the there was a bathroom incident? We were at a club in New York, and there was a couple in the bathroom having sex, and I pulled up into the bathroom because I had to go number two. So I go into the bathroom and I'm going number two, and they're having sex, and other people start coming to the bathroom and they just start screaming like, oh my God, do you smell her? Because this girl was getting all this shame for the smell of my butthole. And I felt like, you know, I should come forward and I should say, no, that poor girl, her vagina does not smell like that. Oh, that was indeed my butthole.
I'm gonna write that into my movie. In my movie, so I'm gonna do this classic scene. But in my classic scene, it will be like that, and it'll be like, oh my God, can you believe how she smells? But it's really just the like loser in the other in the far end of the stall. Going to the bathroom, and then around the whole school, everybody starts whispering about, you know, her vagina smells like butt.
Right. Now that was a true story that really happened, and
I don't remember.
I felt
that
for the girl and the other thing, so I kind of know what that's like to be in the stall, and you hear the people outside talking.
Story you want to throw up.
Also, the TV killing, pretty classic in this one, and that certainly has roots that go way back to the Lost Boys, and before that, I'm sure, Death by TV. Pretty classic stuff there.
Yeah, that reminded me of a scene from Dream Warriors, the third Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Like, welcome to prime time, bitch.
Yeah, we'll get there, buddy. We're going to get there next.
It's too bad that these days you can't use a television as a weapon anymore.
No.
They're like these thin little flimsy.
That's
and
not going to hurt anyone.
They're too big. Yeah, you... I'm going to keep one of those old school TVs around just for self-defense.
Yeah, the smart TV is not going to do shit.
No, it's not.
I think that this movie made it, and one of the things that leading up to this episode I talked about, at least with Dave, is, you know, I think of myself as a fan of the slasher film, but when you go back and you think the classic slasher era is really 74-ish on, say, Black Christmas, even though, more Home Invasion, really. But when you start going back and rewatching a lot of these old slashers, they're not actually that good. And I feel like it got to a point where I think that Scream really is something that this movie really recognized, is that the slasher genre had to become self-aware to do anything else with it. Like, it had been done. It wasn't really, it was never smart. It was never really, you know, high film. And I feel like it had to become self-aware. And after Scream, almost every slasher is, and the rest of the movies we're going to talk about are all meta and all self-aware about what they're doing. Cause I just don't think they have another choice in many cases.
The thing that you're glossing over here with slashers is you're completely ignoring Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, which is a smart slasher, and it came early on in the race.
I'm not ignoring it, but there's no body count really to speak of, and it's in one place. I would call it more of a haunted hotel than a slasher.
No, there's no ghost.
Where's the body count?
Here's that one body. That sits in that chair.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I know that
he doesn't
it's a slasher.
Go he doesn't go anywhere. It's not like he's going to follow you to the police station or anything.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the important things that we've left out is that slashers were really rooted in real serial killers. The whole genre started because people started to make movies about Albert Fish and these real serial killers.
Right.
So
that's a good point.
I think that's a big part of the slasher genre. So I think that Psycho would absolutely fall into that. I mean, it definitely checks off enough of the boxes for, you know, the roots of how the whole subgenre started.
Yeah. And it's got that same twist, like killing off the you know, the name person of the film within in the first scene. So it's very unsuspecting.
I think a lot of the best slashers are just a fun time and a fun ride, and I thought Scream was that.
Moving on to Kevin's choice this week, Freddy vs. Jason, 2003, directed by Ronnie Yu, whose catalog, he has a pretty vast catalog of films. I would never suspect him of making Freddy vs. Jason in 2003. Let's let Kevin, kick this one off. Tell us about Freddy versus Jason, Kevin.
Well, I mean, like Dave said, he thinks that slashers should be, you know, mostly be a fun watch. I don't think you need much of an introduction for this movie. You have two of the most iconic slashers in history in the same movie. Initially, they're kind of working together, but then ultimately they end up fighting, thus the title, Freddy versus Jason. And you talked about a body count, Trent. A lot of people die in this movie. I think the kill count gets up over 20.
Sure. I mean, it's a slasher. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I picked this because I was so excited when this was finally announced. It had been long rumored. You know, and I can get into it later with just how many stops and starts and potential people tied to this movie. You know, one of them was Peter Jackson, who seems to find his way into every single episode that we do. But I picked it because it was literally my introduction to horror was Freddy and it was Jason back in the early 80s. And to see the two of them in a movie together finally was just super fun.
Was it everything you had hoped for?
I don't think so. I think this movie had the potential to be a lot better than it was. But you know, I think at the time, you know, Freddy, after the first like two, maybe three Nightmare on Elm Street movies, had really become more of a comedian than a horror mm-hmm. figure. You know, Dave talks about hating slow slashers, which Jason is definitely like the king of them all. And in this movie, it was almost, they slowed him down to almost like a comedic speed.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude was basically, he was slower than zombies in like a Romero flick. I think there's a lot of classic Jason kills in this that are super dope. I think that, you know, some of the effects are cool. I love, you know, some of the classic nods to the dream sequences from Nightmare on Elm Street. That there's one set in a police station that kind of reminded me of the first movie's high school scene where Nancy kind of wakes up and is in a dream sequence. So it gave me what I needed from both of the franchises that I loved. I think that there was a better way to maybe tie it all together and have a better overall product. But I will say it's a hell of a fun watch.
I thought it was very fun. I hadn't seen it since it first came out when I was just a youngin'. So my rewatch, my hopes weren't very high because we've been watching such highbrow horror films. But I liked the new metal that they played in a lot of that movie. It was very early 2000s. I think the scariest part for me, putting myself, you know, using some empathy and putting myself maybe in that situation, was the kid who was just super baked and then had to deal with the Freddy versus Jason situation. And I was like, that's literally my nightmare, is just like eating an edible or something and just being like sitting there. And then all of a sudden I have to deal with these two slashers just trying to get at me. So in that, that was probably the scariest part for me personally, besides the fake boobs everywhere. It was just two perfect circles
I wanna talk
on everyone's
that.
Chest.
Yeah, the girl who's from Ginger Snaps.
Catherine Isabel.
Is the first one. She's the first one who gets naked in the shower.
It's like,
oh, no,
and she has sex.
No, there's boobs in under a minute.
Oh, the intro.
Under 1 minute is really
impressive.
Yeah,
she's like, fake boobs.
That she's like, I don't know where you are. I guess I'll just jump in the water. It's like, what? Girl, no, you don't know where he is.
Like, you're like, oh, nice. Oh, good. You want boobs in a slasher. You want to get those. And you're like, oh, yeah, boobs right away. Giant silicone abominations of nature staring at you. I mean, like, just ridiculous.
I mean, I'm not here to body shame, but the early 2000s had a very serious fake boob sphere problem. That's all I'm going to say.
And it's like CGI. CGI boobs.
Just to let the people know, those are not Catherine Isabel's boobs.
CGI?
She refuses to do nude scenes, and she was duped into that by the director. She fucking hates this movie, and if you look up like some trash talking she does, so when he revealed the shower scene with her, she made him go find a body double for her.
Probably the first one in the first scene. Just reused it.
You know, the thing I didn't like about this movie is I feel like since Jason came about, everything stemmed from Jason being disrespected. His mom was standing up for him, being bullied. And then over the course of all these sequels, you just see Jason, who's a very scary dude. He's scary. He's one of the best slashers. And his reputation has just been put in the garbage.
Yeah.
And this was the nail in the coffin for Jason because Freddy just uses him the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, Jason doesn't even know why he's back from the dead and why he's doing this. And Freddy kind of makes him his bitch. And I don't like that. It makes me want to get a ski mask or a hockey mask and just start killing people to make Jason have a fucking respectable name.
But that's the thing. So that's the thing. Am I wrong in that this entire movie, you're totally rooting for Jason?
Like, absolutely.
No.
When they start fighting, you're like, I can't wait for Jason to fuck this guy up.
You're not rooting for anything. You're rooting for it to be over.
You see, Jason was my son. And today is his birthday.
Messenger of God, you're doomed if you stay here.
Well, no, I agree that it's very, very cheesy. And if it's kind of a shame to talk about this first for Friday the 13th or even Nightmare on Elm Street, because it's a low point in their career.
Yes.
Let her get away, Mommy. Don't let her live. I won't, Jason. I won't.
There was a lot of controversy surrounding this pick because Kevin had emphasized to me what a huge disappointment this movie was to him. And I was like, well, why do you want to talk about it? But it does have a lot of history, and it does have a place in, you know, the slasher genre because of these two coming together.
Well, I thought it was fun.
Listen,
this movie, Kevin, I know
your childhood, all that. Even though it came out in 2003, you were a fully grown ass man. Okay, so
yeah, that's not what I was going to go for. But
the childhood angle, even though
I
you're
realize
an adult.
You guys you already shamed me privately, so now you have to do it publicly. No, I appreciate that. No, it shows like the real camaraderie or
you're
the maturity level that we have on this podcast.
We're not here to whisper in the corner, Kevin.
Hear me out. Not say how we feel.
I need to go cry in a bathroom stall.
You didn't make this movie.
You had your chance to set this up. Now, what I'm going to tell you is that I'm not coming in here tonight to be cast as guy who doesn't like things, guy who wants to pick on people's choices and things like that. I love this stuff. That's why I'm here. I think that if you go back through every recorded episode, you will hear very few pans from me. And I watched this movie like 2 weeks ago when you first mentioned it, was like sort of a dare. I think Dave actually dared me to watch it one night at like 2 a.m. and I was like, fine, I'll watch it. And coming into tonight, I really, as a professional, as a podcaster, as a connoisseur, as a man, I wanted to watch it again. So I watched it again last night. I rented it again, the second time I rented this thing. And I definitely, I didn't like it anymore whatsoever, but I was able to understand more about what I didn't like, you know? And so I could appreciate it on a level of like, I know now more why I don't like it. So I could appreciate it more on that level. That doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean it's a bad choice or a bad, you know, for anyone else. Me personally, I would never recommend that, you know, anyone watch this.
I will say that that one scene, like the cornfield scene, was pretty dope. Like when everything's on fire and he's like, you know, stabbing people with his fiery machete. I thought that was a pretty cool scene. And then he stabbed the rapist.
Some great Jason kills in this. I mean, when Catherine Isbell gets out of the shower, you know, I mean, he destroys her shitty boyfriend, you know, in the intro, like the bed scene, like snaps the dude. Like,
that's the best kill.
There's some great Jason kills.
Well, I liked the head falling off of the dad when he was like, Dad, what? And it tumbled.
That's like a thing that Jason always does is they always like set up these characters for you to hate them. And then you always get retribution somewhere in the film when Jason eventually kills that character and you're like psyched.
He's a man for the people, you know? But he's here for us. He's taking care of business.
On the one hand, in something like this, it's like they've upped the technology on the kills, although there's so much CGI killing. I'm surprised, Dave, that didn't bum you out a little bit. But, you know, there's a diminishing return on taking these kills so far over the top. Like, it's one thing in the original movie when people are having sex and they get stabbed with a spear through the bed, like, oh. But then it's like he kicks a guy's head 50 feet across a cornfield. Like, it's just not, I feel like there's a diminishing there that's like, okay, I know it's crazier, it's more over the top, and it's more like graphic and you have more technology, but you know, is that really a more effective? To me, I don't think it is.
Well, I mean, this movie, they've been trying to make this movie since 1987. So think about the fact that, you know, it took almost 16 years for them to finally make this thing. And in 87 is when Freddy and Jason were in their heyday. So Sean Cunningham, who started the Friday the 13th franchise, he was trying to work it out with New Line to get Freddy and Jason in a movie together. But
yeah, I read the whole about production hell. Yeah.
I mean, just think of how many movies didn't take 16 years to make and they're very, very good.
Yeah, you guys kind of took the wind out of my sails to really continue talking about the movie, so let's move on.
So, Kevin, just take it from right. The last thing I said was like, I wouldn't recommend this, and then you pretty much cut out. So why don't you just finish it and do whatever you want to do to finish it off? That's totally fine.
Oh, okay, Trent, let's fucking move on. I'm fine.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah, so I mean, this movie, you know, for better or for worse, it had a big box office take. $116 million, which is the highest of all time in the Friday the 13th series, and the second highest in Nightmare on Elm Street behind the horrible remake that came, I think, about 8 years later. So everyone was clamoring for a sequel, like, hey, this movie made money. But the thing is they spent so much money on marketing that nobody really knows if this movie was profitable or not. I mean, they even had Freddy and Jason do a weigh-in in Vegas, like they were going to a boxing match. And they actually had Michael Buffer, who is the Let's Get Ready to Rumble guy, present for it. So they spared no money promoting this thing. But speaking of sequels, they were actually in development to do Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. And it was so close to to happening that Bruce Campbell confirmed it in an interview that he was deep in talks with New Line. The reason it fell apart wasn't necessarily money. It was the fact that New Line was reluctant to let Ash, quote, vanquish these iconic slashers. I mean, killing them has never exactly stopped more movies. But Bruce Campbell was actually reluctant to outright sign on to the movie if Ash wasn't going to outright win. The idea did, however, come to life in a 6-issue comic book series that came after. But I thought that would have been kind of a fun movie to see. And it's not
I wouldn't watch it.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Speak All Evil's take on Freddy versus Jason.
So tonight, when they get home, I'll be waiting. Pardon me, I've got someone to kill.
The film I picked was The Town That Dreaded Sundown, 2014. It's actually a sequel to the 1976 original by the same name. This sequel was directed by Alfonso Gomez Rejon, who's mostly known for his work on American Horror Story. I picked this movie hastily. I had originally picked Maniac, 1980. But I switched it up at the 25th hour because I wanted to pick something that was newer. Because sometimes I find movies from my childhood don't age well. So I was a little afraid of some of these old slashers. Because like I said, they are pretty dumbed down. But that's where I went wrong. Because, you know, the golden age of slashers is definitely the 70s and 80s. Mostly because of like Tom Savini, the practical effects master. The original Town That Dreaded Sundown is based on the true moonlight murders that happened in Texarkana, Arkansas in the spring of 1946. And since its release, the anniversary has become a pseudo holiday in Texarkana where they show the film at local drive-ins and movie theaters. And I just want to point out that Arkansas is probably the only stupid, backward, hillbilly-ass state that would celebrate such an L.
Yes.
For some reason,
I know it's
the
so
South
weird.
Loves to revel in defeat.
It's bizarre.
Also, the Phantom Killer dons a very similar look to a KKK member, with a white potato sack or a pillowcase that has two eye holes cut into it.
Well, also the first two Friday the 13th had the bag, the pillowcase.
Yeah, but with just one eye.
Oh,
hole
true,
cut out.
true.
But what we're talking about is the sequel to that original movie, which you kind of have to cite the first movie because this is the story of Texarkana getting murdered while they celebrate the anniversary of the original film or the original killings. That whole turducken vibe drew me toward it.
I was surprised, Dave, you know, when I started looking into this movie, like, wait a minute. This guy's done a bunch of, like, Glee and American Horror Story shows. That's kind of his directorial background. And wait a minute. So this is a Ryan Murphy thing. And wait,
Blumhouse.
Jason Blum produced this? I was like,
he'd never,
wow.
Blumhouse, all the people I hate. Yeah.
Jason had never even seen it. He was just like, whatever, we can make it for, you know, $5 million, throw some spaghetti at the wall.
Well, it's, you know, so I think the weirdest thing about this, not even getting into like the meat and potatoes of the film, there are so many heavy hitters behind this movie, and it never got a theatrical release.
Oh, it did?
I mean, no, this movie's so polished, and there's all these people behind it, all these actors. I mean, I think like even the score was done. I mean, you had Edward Herman from Lost Boys as Reverend Cartwright. You had Anthony Anderson in this thing. There's so many people. It's Ludwig Göransson who did the score for this. He won an Academy Award for Black Panther, his work on Venom. But he's also a Grammy-winning record producer that works with Childish Gambino, Chance the Rapper, Haim. I mean, he did This Is America. Like, you had insane talent on this movie, and they literally just dumped it out into streaming.
That's so weird that I never would have guessed that it didn't get a theatrical release. There was a whole bunch of good people in the... I watched both Town That Dreaded Sundowns, and I didn't hate
the first one. It was very campy. It was very... Trent, how did you describe it?
Budget Zodiac meets the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes.
Absolutely. I would say that's a very good description of it. I had always heard... This is like... The original is a very classic slasher film based off of the OG Lover's Lane, you know, hook in the side of the car kind of situation.
Yes. Yeah.
But just looking into, like, if you actually look into, you know, the Phantom of Texarkana, the Moonlight Murders, it was all, like, there was never really an ending to it. Like, they never found, you know, they never convicted anybody. It was just a real major bummer. And the guy that the Texas Ranger, you know, the main character guy is, like, based off of was such a tool in real life. Like, he showed up, you know, elbows out, being like, I'm the only one that's talking to the press, and I'm doing that. And he always had, like, a perfect white, like, cowboy hat, like, 10-gallon hat with, like, a, you know, a perfect suit on. And he was just such a tool. Like, he would take all the work that all the other policemen did. Like, he'd hop in the car and have them, like, brief him on everything and then, like, go to the press and be like, this is what I found. And, like, he was just not a fun IRL case. And it's kind of a bummer because they had a few suspects, but no evidence ever really came to fruition. It was all circumstantial. And so now there's, you know, I think the big pull to this, you know, is that Texarkana has that film showing every year. And they're always like, he could still be walking among us, like 70 years later. And it's just like, it's funny, but the sequel was definitely like a very, you know, boob centric modern horror movie.
Mm. Those people in Arkansas that celebrate this movie and these killings every year, they're definitely protesting to go outside in the midst of the coronavirus.
So this movie, this is a meta sequel in that the movie itself, the characters, the place is aware of the original movie. So they take you right into, it's Halloween night in Texarkana, and the original, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, is being shown at the drive-in. So right away, it sets the table with this very meta thing. The first thing that came to my mind is they set it on Halloween night, and yet there are no costumes anywhere. There are no decorations anywhere at all. There are no parties. There are no talk of parties. Nobody mentions that it's Halloween again after they just say...
It's not Halloween.
No, it's Halloween night.
It's the anniversary of the killing.
It's Halloween night. The first, when they show the drive-in, the first killing...
Oh, the first one.
Yeah, when the film is set originally on Halloween night, they're at the drive-in, they're showing that movie, but you wouldn't know it's Halloween night except they just say... on Halloween night. It's just a small example of how...
That was a workaround. Yeah, that was a workaround for budget because they couldn't afford Halloween costumes. That's why they just had afford some sack with holes in it.
Yeah, they spent it all on Anthony Anderson.
It's just an example of how lazy the movie is and what a... You know, this is just Jason Blum being like, whatever, here's $5 million. See if you can do something. I've never even heard of this. But my main thrust here, if I can have any take on this, and there's other stuff that I thought was interesting about the movie, is for Kevin. Kevin, I didn't like this any more than Freddy vs. Jason. I just want you to know, man to man, friend to friend, co-host to co-host, I'm not picking on you or your choice. I thought these were both stinkers, and you guys both picked bad movies this week. Just for me personally, that doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means it didn't tickle my, you know, horror bone, if you know what I mean.
Your penis?
When Kevin recommends a movie to me and I watch it and I don't like it, I want to kill him.
That's true.
I remember loaning you the movie Frontiers, Dave, and it was like a burned copy. and you were so fucking pissed at me because it had a scratch on it, apparently, and you kept getting yes. like three quarters of the way through it, and it was stuck. And I remember coming, like, you literally wanted to fight me at your apartment one day because you were like, all I want to do is finish this movie.
Did you guys fight? You didn't fight?
And I don't think either of us are much of fighters.
We're not. I just go straight to murder.
Kevin, I know you're still licking your wounds from Freddy vs. Jason, but I'm hoping that my admission that I didn't like this one any better will help you move into this one. I'd like to hear what you thought about it.
I have admittedly been incredibly sensitive about Freddy vs. Jason, so I will be very, very self-aware about that. You know what? I kind of like this. I know everything that's wrong with it. Hey, look, I mean, I think all of us, well, maybe not all of us, I will watch the worst horror movie before I'll watch, like, the best movie in any other genre. Yeah. I'll sit down and watch Mosquito before I sit there and watch Gravity.
Okay? He tried to get me to watch The Boogeyman one time.
Yeah, it's anything's game for me. Look, the ending is so lazy and so bad.
They just did Scream.
But it made less sense than Scream.
But you know what? I am kind of a sucker for the fact that it was like this meta sequel where, you know, they're talking about the original movie was actually made about real murders and the town is celebrating it. I love the way that they brought in the original movie's director's son, Charles Pierce Jr., that he's still like roaming around the town and he knows who the killer is. But there's some kind of smart horror stuff in this, like Reverend Cartwright, who's played by Edward Herman, who was Max from The Lost Boys. He passed away in 2000. He passed away in 2014. This was actually his last film. So, R.I.P. Mr. Herman. Do you guys notice that when they all started investigating, they traced like these shitty emails that somebody had written. They traced them back to the Reverend. That gave me like a super BTK vibe because if you remember, Dennis Rader got caught because he was working at a church.
Yeah,
sending emails into the FBI that they eventually traced back there. I like the fact, Trent, that there was microfiche in this. Come on,
they mentioned They mentioned it, but they didn't show it.
Oh, you need to see it. Okay. I also like the fact, and I couldn't find anything to confirm this, but the killer with the sack over his face and the two eye holes, the only distinctive feature he had was very, very blue eyes. And did you notice how many people in this movie had blue eyes? Like, I swear to God, they must have made a bunch of actors wear contacts to try to make you think, ooh, that could be the killer, or that could be the killer. I mean, again, I'm a sucker. Maybe I'm looking for reasons to like a movie or looking for things to pick up on. It had some cool kills. I mean, come on, trombone.
So it wasn't a trombone. I think we talked about this before. It was a saxophone, but it literally had nobody got murdered with any weird knifely tied instruments. So I thought that was cool in the original that they were like, you know what? This is going to be a trombone now, and you're going to get stabbed with it. But also, I guess you guys tell me you are musicians. Would you be able to blow into a trombone if you have a sack over your face?
Oh, you wouldn't.
Well, he doesn't make though. He just kind of uses it as a mime to stab.
Just a stab.
He doesn't play it. There's no note that comes out of it.
He tries.
He's just kind of miming it.
I think that that's what has made this movie so legendary is that it has that unique death scene with a trombone.
But that's from the first. Yeah, that's also from the first movie,
right? But I feel like if that scene didn't happen, it really wouldn't stand out.
Probably right. I really liked, and I mean like sarcastically, when there's like an old grandmother and her granddaughter is asking her about the killings, and she says, "quote Nobody knew exactly who he was or what he did." And I'm like, well, they know exactly what he did, for sure. We know what he did. It just, there was so much of this throwaway stuff, and that really reminded me, like, I'm not one of these guys that knows every line from Spinal Tap at all, but a few stay with me, and all I could think was when they do the druid narration, and it's like, Nobody knows who they were or what they were doing. Like, it was that equivalent. It was, like, that stupid of a thing just transposed into a horror movie. I did appreciate the extra brutality in this that's not in the first one. Like, the first one's, the killings are pretty tame. You don't get a lot of brutality. I like brutality. I want to see savagery and blood and stuff. But I would liken this to Freddy versus Jason in that sometimes, like, when you get to the sixth or seventh stab and it's got that, like, really loud sound effect going in and blood is squirting like 30 feet in the air, it kind of takes a little bit of the oomph out of it. Like when you, there's a scene where he kills someone in the front seat of a car and he's stabbing her, you know, again and again, and it's loud, and somehow they're in the front seat.
Yeah.
The back windshield becomes totally splattered with blood beyond, like, this is just, you know, they're not even trying to even just make, like, physical sense. Like, just, it's so out there.
Did you guys pick up on when the director's son, when Charles Pierce Jr., did you pick up on what I thought was, like, a Zodiac reference? When he's trying to tell them who the real killer was, he says he infers that the Phantom hopped a train to California.
I think he's
inferring that the Phantom went to California and reappeared in the 60s, 70s
maybe,
as the Zodiac.
Well, it's that scene from Zodiac where the guy looks exactly like the Phantom Killer.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the people are picnicking.
I appreciated the young guy who helps Jamie with the investigation later in the movie and becomes sort of the love interest for Jamie. Their first date is he invites her to a candlelight vigil for murdered people. I was like, I've never seen him. He's like, so what are you doing tonight? Do you want to go to the vigil? And they go to the candlelight vigil as a date. I've never heard of that. And then someone dies there. So,
have you seen?
I mean, that's the kind of date I would ask, like, Kat out on or something.
Oh, you have a horror podcast.
I feel like that's,
do you want,
like,
to go to this murder vigil?
You have to know your audience.
It would work on me. I wouldn't say no.
Okay, so my selection this week, Lake Bottom 2016. This is a nasty little Finnish movie. And I don't mean that it's done. I mean that it's from Finland. This was also inspired by, not based on, but inspired by a true crime episode, the 1960 Lake Bottom murders. This is directed and co-written by Tanelli Mustonen. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I really like this. I thought this was the least meta of the four. It is still a little bit meta because they kind of, there is some twisting up. It's not totally straight, but it's not sarcastic. It's not self-aware. It's not a satire of other movies. You have four teens going camping at a camping site where people were murdered under various false pretenses. One teen wants to recreate the crimes, and he's trying to, like, work on the case, and everything goes pretty crazy from there. What'd you guys think of this one?
I love this movie. There's very little you can say without giving away the plot.
Yeah. Mm.
And the plot is essential, which is very rare to find in a slasher movie, and I appreciated that this had a pretty smart plot. It had good dialogue. It was believable. I thought Lake Bottom was a great movie.
It was very twisty. There were some twists. I was kind of out of it, I would say, like, because it's a little harder for me sometimes when I can't hear it, when it's just subtitles, for me to stay on board. So sometimes I'll, you know, go in and out a little bit. But all of a sudden I look up and there was some twists happening and I'm like, oh, rewind, you know. It was good. I liked it. I think it was a top pick for me this week.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, for straight horror, no emotions attached, this was easily the best horror movie or slasher movie. Mm-hmm. that we watched this week. And again, Trent, like, you went and picked a movie like One Cut of the Dead that is almost impossible to talk about. And then you go and pick this one that is almost impossible to talk about. It's really hard to find much on this movie, plot-wise. So again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but good job by the fans, the people that made this movie, like really keeping this under wraps. There aren't a lot of spoilers out there. It's, you know, Trent's really cementing himself as like the challenge pick, which, you know, I appreciate. I think the listeners should as well. And you can't even, there's so many movies I want to talk about that this movie, or at least scenes in this movie, reminded me of, but I can't even do that because I don't want to give anything away. There's a particular, you know, French horror movie that I'd like to talk about that we've covered.
There's, I know what you mean.
There's an Australian flick that I have in mind that is also...
Me too. Okay, look. I mean, that's fine. That's fine. I think you can say there are elements that remind you of High Tension, right?
Yeah.
And there are
Martyrs too.
Yeah.
There are elements of Wolf Creek.
Yep.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Wolf Creek is a great slasher.
Yes. I almost picked that.
Me too, but it's that not available. It's not available anywhere right now. You have to like buy it. You can't rent it.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
Only the sequel.
And they even have like the TV series. It's like pretty recent
too.
The series is out there, but the original Wolf Creek movie, right now at least, you can't really get anywhere. That was one of the ones. Also, Cold Prey. I love Cold Prey, and I watched the sequel. Cold Prey 2 is fantastic, but I figured I would save that for a sequel episode. So I was just looking for something because at the time I picked this, I thought Dave was going Maniac original. And then, you know, Kat was going the meta reconstruction of Slasher with Scream. And then Kevin just threw his pick into a lake. So I was trying to think of something that was like from the current century that could bring us up to 2016.
Sure.
You tried to pick
the lake I actually threw my pick into?
Yeah, I tried to go to the bottom of the lake. I tried to get my car keys out of your pick, and I couldn't do it. So I just wanted something that would at least bring us up to 2016, and it wasn't a parody of itself. Like it's not. So I mean, there are twists, but it's not self-aware in the same way that Sundown or Freddy vs. Jason or Scream is. I was a little disturbed that they brushed their teeth in the lake water. That was one. I don't think that's a spoiler.
It's Finland, though. It's probably cleaner. I don't know what, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay, that's true. That's true.
You're probably paying like $2 a bottle for that water at the gas station.
That might be a good point. I just think if you're camping for one night, you bring a bottle of water. I wouldn't be putting my brush in the pond. I don't know. That's just me.
These guys didn't seem real strong on planning. You know, you talked about how the premise is there's two older boys and two younger girls. They dupe them into going camping with them, not knowing that they want to recreate the original Lake Bottom murders.
Reconstruct. They want to reconstruct. They don't want to actually do the murders.
Yeah, so there's...
But they want to sort of reconstruct
the
scene.
They want to solve them.
It's
right.
Well, it's funny to me that this movie is a brisk 85 minutes long. They pack so much stuff into it. But if you think about it, like a lot of the things that you read say it's so fast paced and, you know, they cram a lot into it. The first half of the movie is actually incredibly slow. But when he finally pulls the ripcord, like other than a questionable kind of long flashback scene, like in, you know, sort of the third act, this movie, once it gets going, I mean, he just puts the pedal to the floor.
Yeah.
And at times I was finding myself, as much as I enjoyed it, being like, okay, like one more twist and I'm like, I'm out. Like you can't possibly continue to keep like unfolding things in this movie.
But it doesn't. It doesn't go that crazy with it. It's a very simple, straightforward story. Yes, there are some surprises, but it doesn't get like super complex. It's a pretty fundamental, straightforward ride. Very economical, like you said, 85 minutes. I enjoyed it, and I hadn't seen it before. Kat, did you look into the Lake Bottom murders?
I did. Yeah, I've got a little rundown of the Lake Bottom murders. So It happened in Espoo, Finland, June 5th, 1960s. It was, 1960. It was two 15-year-old girls and their two 18-year-old boyfriends. Well, well, well. So, between the 4 and 6 a.m., all four were stabbed and or bludgeoned through the tent. So the four were sleeping inside, and then someone from the outside stabbed through the tent, bludgeoned with a different object through the tent. And then some bird watchers or some hikers came across them the next morning, found just a bloody mess, one person on top of the tent, just stabbed. There's only one survivor, that one guy, Nils Gustafsson, probably pronounced it incorrectly. But he was always, I guess not right at first, but later, about 40 years later, they tried to pin him for the murders because his girlfriend was the one who was stabbed the most and like the most violently. Yes. And the quote-unquote killer put his shoes on while he was murdering everyone, because everyone else's blood is on those shoes except for Nils. Then those shoes were found hidden down the path with some other stolen items. But the killer's never been found. Nils was never convicted. I mean, yeah, but also it was the 1960s, so cops were... They basically told everyone, like, they got the whole town to come and help them look for the murder weapons. So everyone from the town just came and walked on everything. All the cops are just smushing everything down with their little footprints. So there wasn't a lot of evidence to be had. They never found the murder weapons. There have been some suspects besides Nils, but it's just one of those things.
There was a local guy who used to, like, rip down people's tents. He was anti-camper.
Yeah. He worked at the campground. He, like, had... He, like, he worked... He, like, worked at the store and then was just mad at everyone all the time and would, like, throw things at kids and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And they ripped down their tents.
And
yeah.
they found him filling in his well, actually, like, a few days later. And so they're like, oh, well, let's go dig up that well because maybe he buried... the weapons in there, but then they like searched.
Never found the weapons.
Well, they never dug up the well. They like interviewed him and searched, and then his wife gave him an alibi, and they're like, okay, well, I guess we don't have to dig up the well.
I think one of the weird things about this case, and I strongly urge people to go down the Reddit thread on this. It's a big rabbit hole. is how did somebody just come upon four people and kill them all with three of them still literally just being in the tent and one of them presumably beaten almost to death also inside the tent and being able to drag himself out.
He was found on top of the tent.
Yeah, so how did somebody just incapacitate four people and pull this off?
Because it was him.
Well, he was tried.
It was obviously him.
They wouldn't get us.
He was tried in 2004. They actually arrested him 44 years later and put him trial, and he was acquitted
because it was too late. There wasn't enough. It was obviously him. He was found outside the tent. Cap, I don't know why you're laughing. His shoes had everyone else's blood on them, and then he hid his shoes like 200 feet from the campsite. I mean, he obviously did it.
But maybe not.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed the performance of Mimosa Wilamo in this. She's in a couple other movies I might check out. There's also a Finnish quote unquote extreme metal band called Children of Bottom. They're not extreme to me. They're more like an extreme like aluminum band. They remind me of like the soundtrack.
That's good.
They remind me of like the Freddy versus Jason soundtrack, like Slipknot, Seven Dust. Power Man, 5000.
Little new metal.
Yeah.
Kevin, do you know if Lick Bottom is a sequel to this? I saw a movie a while ago called Lick Bottom about a bunch of ass eaters, and it was non-fatal, but do you know if that is anyway tied to this movie?
I'll have to do some digging, Dave. I'll get back to you.
There's also Lick Bottom 3, Lick Bottom. I assume there's Lick Bottom 2, but it's hard to find. You have to get a hard
copy. And now this, podcast has
like
reached the bottom.
Power Bottom. Very much sure, guys. Very
so
much sure.
Sorry.
Very much sure.
I shouldn't be laughing this time.
All right, everyone gather around. It's time for the horror news. Just when you thought the news couldn't get any worse, we are here to make it so. A 17-year-old murder suspect was inspired by a Halloween slasher flick. Texas teenager Jake Evans told police he murdered his mother and sister after watching Halloween. Not the John Carpenter one, but the Rob Zombie one. It all happened in 2012 in Aledo, Texas. Evans watched the film 3 times and stated while watching it, he was amazed at how at ease the boy was during the murders and how little remorse he had afterward.
Wow.
And was thinking to himself, it would be the same for me when I kill someone. 17-year-old Evans killed his 48-year-old mother, Jamie, and his 15-year-old sister, Mallory. He stated that he wanted to use a knife for the murders, but instead used a .22 revolver to kill his family. Probably should have stuck with a knife if he wanted to be like Halloween, but I digress. He had also planned to kill his grandparents and other siblings, but after the shooting of his mother and sister, he called 911. In the 911 call, he stated, "Obviously, I am pretty, I guess, evil." Evans was convicted of these murders in 2015 and was sentenced to only 45 years because our system is broken. So the question, everyone, is, do horror movies make people kill? Probably not. This person was obviously very mentally ill and was looking for a way to act out in his rich Texas community and decided to murder his family and then regretted it right afterwards. So don't blame the horror movies.